Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi everyone, I'm Chad and I have the pleasure of introducing you to Lee Martucci. Lee, thanks so much for talking product management with us today. Lee's a marketing professional with over 25 years of experience with numerous roles in product management, from telecommunications and cell phone services to building and construction materials. He is currently helping GAF. You likely know this company if you've been involved in building, repairing your roof, or walking through Home Depot or Lowe's, where the roofing shingles and sealants are sold. Lee, I'm glad we could arrange this interview, and that's really because you have such diverse experiences in different industries as a product manager.
Well, thank you, Chad. I'm glad to be here.
So let's start with that diverse experience. Did you find it difficult to change industries as a product manager? You know, that's pretty different going from telecommunications like into construction materials.
You know, it can be, but I've always found most important is to be, you know, really have the discipline, understand the discipline of product management. I find it a lot easier to go from a product manager in one company to another one that's a totally different product and market than it would be to change from, let's say, from a salesperson to a product manager. So in my particular situation, I went from telecom to building products. And for me to go from a telecom, very large structured kind of product management group to, let's say, building products on another very large, sophisticated product management group, it might be a little tougher just because they can attract people that may have already had that product experience.
Sure.
But what I did is I went to a smaller company in the building products, and they really valued the fact that I had product management experience in a different field. And I was able to quickly learn the products and the market. So bottom line is I think it's easier to move to another company, another market, than it is to move to a whole different discipline, like going from sales to market or to product management.
Okay, so your path there was actually to go join a smaller company that appreciated the product management processes that you had, the knowledge that you had, as opposed to trying to reestablish yourself in a larger company, like you said, where they could attract, you know, more people with product management experience.
That's right.
Very good. So how did you gain that product management experience? What kind of things did you do along the way to make you kind of stand out as someone that really understood product management well, so you could jump industries?
Yeah, so I don't know. Today, maybe they have product management majors. Back when I started, they certainly did not.
We still don't see too many of them.
Okay. It was a business major. So, and I started out, I was a marketing major, and like many marketing majors, your first jobs sometimes are sales. And I did work in sales for quite a while. The way that I got from sales into product management was really by doing product management type activities in my sales position. I'll give you a specific example. I was working at telecom with US West, which is now, I guess, CenturyLink in Colorado. I, as a sales manager and a salesperson, had created a competitive analysis report for the market and shared that up the line to corporate. That report was nobody else was doing it, and so to do that report required marketing research, required studying competitors, pricing, how they position in the market. So what that did is it separated, I would say, myself from other sales managers, that this person actually has product management type skills and aptitude, and then when a position came open, I was able to apply for that and to say they recognized it because they recognized that I did the competitive analysis. But also I was able to pitch the sales and the street smarts benefit that I would bring into that position. So they really valued that as, hey, we got somebody that knows the market, knows competitors, been out there carrying a bag, and this person has the skills to be able to do product management. So basically found an area of product management and excelled in it, even from my position that, you know, wasn't a product manager.
The street smarts sure go a long ways.
Yeah.
What was your motivation at that point? I'm curious. Were you just trying to do a better job as a sales manager, or did you have this notion of wanting to work into being closer to the product development?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I really wasn't doing it to try to get a position up at corporate. I was doing it because I just felt that to be really effective at my job, I need to really understand the market and understand the competitors. There was another angle that I recall. Is a lot of times we would have corporate come down with either pricing or products that I knew weren't going to work in the market because they never asked the salespeople. That was my way of saying, hey, these are the things you need to consider as you're developing products and pricing for our market. So I was doing it so that they would deliver products that I knew I could sell, and therefore I'd be more successful at sales. It just happened to lead to an opportunity at corporate in the product management.
Okay, so you were trying to pull through actually from the product management group to get products you knew the customers needed.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, so in effect, kind of helping do the job that product managers do to understand what customers value.
That's, yes, very true.
That made it a good transition, I get that. Mm-hmm. Let me go back to just that transition a little bit, because a question I often get asked is, how do you break into product management? Because most of the job openings, they'll state, you know, minimum number of years of product management experience for this role. And mm-hmm. it's that classic catch 22, you know, for applicants that I don't have the experience yet, how do I get the experience? So you went from an existing sales role and you just started doing some product management activities.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then was it a formal position was open that you applied for, or?
Yes. So, it's often hard to, if you don't have that experience, to get that, say I had those 2 years. But here's a couple things. One is, know that when people are lay out a job description, I look at it as the wish list. All right. And I've hired quite a few people too in over the years. And let's say you have, you know, four key things that you need from that applicant. You're usually going to get three of the four, let's say. If you only have two of the four, that's probably not a good fit. It's rare that you get four out of the four. So I look at that 2 years experience as, they say it's a requirement, but you've got to have pretty much all the other skills and experience that you can, and you can overcome that. If you're going to try to go from, like I did, from, let's say, a sales into product management, it's going to be very difficult to go from one company in sales to a product management somewhere else, as opposed to going in your own company where they know you and they know your experience. Mm-hmm. So, for example, what I did is, when I was in telecom, I went from that sales manager to product management. They knew me. They knew what I could do. They knew I've had some of that experience in that competitive analysis. So it was easier for them to say, okay, he doesn't have product management, but we know him. He does all these other things. He understands our market. He understands our business. And therefore, I was able to make that switch. Had I gone to telecom sales, trying to get into building products, product management, that wouldn't work. It'd be too big of a jump for them to take, unless my uncle worked for the company or something.
So some inside path there.
Yeah, right.
Very good. So in changing industries, so you did that successfully by starting with a smaller company that really appreciated the product management disciplines you had. This is a question I get asked a lot of time, because product managers will find a position they're really interested in, and have that deep experience as a product manager, but it's outside their prior industry experience.
Right.
And the job application might say, you know, we want someone with this kind of industry experience, you know, been in the industry for the last 5 years or something. Mm-hmm. And frankly, it's something I struggle with too. The distinction that I found is, if it's a company that's looking on how do we improve our existing offerings, then I can appreciate that industry experience being meaningful and can shortcut some things. But at the same time, the products I've been involved with and that I've seen others involved with that were truly innovative, it was innovative because often the product manager was from outside that industry and didn't come in with the assumptions that everyone else was making.
Yep. Yes. Yeah. So what I would say to that is you've got to sell that because there is truth to that. And the person on doing the interviewing and the hiring may or may not recognize that, but there's certainly advantages of having fresh eyes and looking at it from a different perspective. You can get very myopic in a company and in how you look at things. So having somebody from the outside can be advantageous to that company to get a new way of thinking. And that's where a lot of your breakthroughs will come. So I think as an interviewee in that position, you need to, take that what could be perceived the negative, don't have experience in industry, and spin it that way. It's showing that that can be a very, very much a positive. And even better, if you're able to find examples of where either you've done it or other people have done that in the past.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Lee, I appreciate you sharing that. So for the everyday innovators listening right now, the notion there is if you want to switch to another industry, focus really on the disciplines of product management and how coming with a fresh set of eyes to that work really can lead to the breakthrough innovations that offer much more value than the customers have had in the past from the experiences. So
yeah, that's right. And just to add to that, the idea that of learning the market and the actual products is a heck of a lot easier than learning how to be a good product manager. And stressing that point that you interviewing are that great product manager, you can learn the products in the market.
Yeah. And so on that point, what are some of the things that you did to learn product management? Was it just grinding out the years, and going through products and getting experience? Or did you proactively also seek out, some information?
Yeah, all of the above. First, when I first started, it was a lot of learning from my peers, my boss, from others, and seeing how they approach their jobs and learning from them. At the same time, we had, as many people may know, Robert Cooper, who wrote the book on winning new products. I believe it's been a while. It's been back in the early 90s that I
yep.
we actually brought Robert Cooper in to install our new product development process. So we had people who wrote the books who knew the market and learned from them as well. And then going forward, I joined as where I met you, Chad, at the PDMA, mm-hmm. Product Management Development Association, learned a lot from networking from other product managers, and then went to get certified in the new product development professional, the NPDP discipline, went through that, studied, went through that course and passed that test and then continued to learn. So it's a combination of books. It's a combination of networking, learning from inside your company, but very important outside the company too. So I think networking groups are very valuable, and you should get involved.
Yeah, and things like meetup.com, makes that all so much easier these days to find groups of people doing similar sort of work or interested in similar activities and dive in and talk with each other. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've been involved with that new product development professional, the NPDP certification, so long now. I kind of lose track of who I've worked with. And it's interesting to me how many people I run into that have done that or something like that as formal, education to really prepare themselves to excel in product management.
So. Yeah. I think a lot of people get so bogged down in their job and they have so much to do. And they just end up taking on, what your internal company kind of views is how to do product management. But I think you need to take a step back, step away from the company and really get out and learn from others. There's always things that are changing in this business, new techniques, new tools that are out there. And I think you're not going to learn that by just nose at a grindstone in your own company.
Right. Yeah, lots of opportunities just to see how the product management concepts are applied by different people in different industries. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, you do it that way. That's interesting. Maybe I should think about how that applies to us.
Exactly.
So just to recap, the kind of roles that you've had. So you started in marketing, and I think marketing was your actual educational background, right? Marketing and business?
Yes.
And moved to sales as a career.
Right.
And then from that into product management?
Yeah, sales management, and then into product management, yes.
Okay. Did we miss any roles along the way?
Well, but when I was in product management, I actually got out of product management a couple times along the way. But I always kept coming back to product management. So once I got into product management, it evolved into an opportunity in channel management. So I did that for a few years.
So tell us how that differs. What were your responsibilities as a channel manager?
So as a channel manager, it was less of the developing new products and more of the managing the relationship and the programs. It was more of a program type of management for the salespeople. So, for example, I would take new products that were developed, and then I would launch and manage that new product with the channel. I would also develop programs to help the salespeople do their job better. This was in the telecom space. And one thing was to understand where our footprint was that we could deliver service. So it was realizing that there was times where they would sell where we couldn't provide service. So how do we develop a tool so that we make sure that they know where they can and can't sell and what the performance of our network would be in those areas? So that leads to a development activity and creating tools for them so they can do their job. So different things like that, assisting the product managers in launches. So I did that for a few years, and it was very good. I was in a position where I had been a salesperson and also been a product manager, so that in between was very effective.
Sure, yeah, perfect combination, and no doubt that gave you huge credibility with both groups.
That's right. That's right. So salespeople, you know, salespeople, this is a point I think helps in product management. I got into product management because I got frustrated with my company bringing things to the market that I knew wouldn't work because they didn't ask, they didn't understand what it was like to be trying to sell it. You know, nothing happens till something gets sold. Another one of my favorite sayings comes from the sales side. Mm-hmm. And you are really developing these products so that can be sold by the salespeople, or if it's retail, by the, you know, on the retail shelf. So you need to understand that. And you cannot understand that by sitting back at corporate and going on your computer and, you know, pulling up other websites. You need to get out in the field. So being that I was a salesperson, it's always helped me relate to the people who actually have to sell it. And I've had, you know, people say, hey, Lee gets it. Salespeople say that. So there's that credibility that's very important. If you haven't been a salesperson, then I'd suggest you need to spend a lot of time with salespeople and show them that you're listening to them and you're traveling with them and understanding what customer needs and what salespeople need to sell it.
Man, I love that motivation you shared, that your interest in product management was to get products that customers would buy from us, right? That actually solved a problem they cared about,
right.
Which kind of suggests that product management at the time for you then was not doing what they should have been doing to really enable the sales team to be successful with good products, right? Because
right.
A good product customer wants almost sells itself, right? I don't want to diminish the importance mm-hmm. of the sales role. But if you have a product customers don't want, a really good salesperson has a tough time with that no matter what.
Yeah, that's right. And you can have products that are good products, but if nobody's selling it, you know, especially in a direct sales type of situation, if nobody's selling it because the salesperson doesn't understand it, or let's just say the salesperson aren't compensated appropriately for it, the product won't get sold. It could be a great product. So you need to always make sure you understand, you know, that it's the place part of the four P's of marketing, right? It's the distribution, it's the salespeople, it's how it actually gets to the customer. So it just can't be a great product. You got to figure out how you're going to sell it. And understanding your channels, your sales channels, is going to be key, in the key component in getting that thing to market.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good. So do you have an example then of a time where there was a product that you were involved with that you thought could be better, or maybe, you know, one starting from the beginning?
You mean when I was in a sales capacity?
You can take us wherever you like to begin with. So looking for an example of just the, kind of what you learn from a product development experience of, you know, here's something we could do better and how did we figure out what to do?
Yeah. A lot of times it can be little subtle things. We had a product when I was working for a building materials company, which did caulks and sealants. And the product, typically we put these in, our products in a 11-ounce caulk tube. We're originally going to go out in that type of configuration, but then we really want to understand who the target audience was and how they would do it, install this product. It was a sealant for in a bathroom. The product was often we found that the person who would do sealing around things like the sink, for example, a lot of times we found that the females were actually doing the work, where you might think, oh, okay, it's on the guy's honey-do list and he does it. Well, a lot of times it's the females. And so this target.
Yeah, that's only because the guy that she asked to do it never got around to it.
You might have experience.
I'm speaking as a husband who may have ignored a few things on my honey-do list at times.
Yeah, exactly. And so anyway, the woman doesn't have a caulk gun, right? So they're like, I don't want to buy a caulk gun. But they certainly are familiar with the squeeze tube. So, and the jobs were smaller too. It wasn't like you're doing a whole, you know, huge bathroom, shower and all that. So the idea, you know, let's put this product in a squeeze tube, was a lot more targeted towards that customer. You've got, a female who's using this product. You want to make it so that it's easy to operate. Let's say, you don't need a lot of force to squeeze it necessarily. The product needs to come out easily. And just make this product very easy to reseal too, was something we learned. And then from the sales side of it, originally we were starting with this, 8-ounce tube, for example. Well, we found that our competitors were smaller, and that size tube would put us out of the market, because when they're hanging there, I don't think you pay a whole lot of attention, or many people don't, whether it's 5 ounces or 6 ounces. You just see the two sitting there, and you think it's the same. And, you know, marketers have been doing this all the time, finding that right, you know, amount of volume that's in the product. So coming out with a 5-inch tube versus a 7-ounce enabled us to get to a price point that was also important. Wanted to get the price below the $10 range. So there's all these factors involved working with distribution to figure out where the product needs to be in size, how the product's configured for who the target audience was. Had we designed this as a regular caulk tube, it would be, you know, priced high, be in the wrong section, and probably wouldn't have been as successful as it is. So today it's on most Ace hardware stores and True Values, and it's been a successful product.
Yeah, great example. So, and really a good example of product repositioning, of taking an existing sealant, a caulk, and putting it in a new product for a new market segment. And I don't know if you were involved in this work or not. I'm curious what happened to, you know, what research was done to recognize that there was a need here for women to have a product that could be applied without having to also purchase the caulk, you know, the caulk gun, and what steps were taken to uncover this in the first place?
Yeah, well, first we started out talking with our distribution partners, going to our Ace Hardwares, and talking to them and really understanding what products are out there and what some of the problems were with caulk. And the whole idea, this product was a mildew-free product. It's for a bathroom, and so there was a concern about mildew, right? Mildew has been something that's been growing in, no pun intended, in concerns lately, mold and mildew and the hazards of it. So you've got this kind of upswing and just recognition of the issue. So therefore, having a product that really addressed that was important. The distribution of the Ace Hardwares of the world confirmed that people would come in and say, will this mildew? So it led to the name, which is mildew free. Pretty clearly tells what the product is. And
Lee, let me ask you, was that interaction with those partners, was that visiting them, talking, you know, is this in-person interviews? Is it, you know, phone calls, surveys?
Visiting. But what I would also do too is, I would go to the caulk aisle and just kind of hang out. I'd see somebody maybe looking at caulks, and I'd go there, watch without stalking, but watch what they're looking at. And you'd see they look at the label, they turn it over, and they try to read something. They'd look at the other one. So you just kind of observe that observation of them in their natural environment. It's funny, sometimes they'd ask me, they'd go, have you ever used this? So they'd turn and ask me, or I'd ask them, I'd say, have you used that before? As I'm just a curious shopper. And they'd go, no, or yes, I've used it and it works well. And so you just learn from them by hanging out, you know, and visiting. So, I was fortunate that I was in that business where I could go down to the local Ace Hardware store and as I always had to go for other things anyway, just kind of experience that aisle. So you learn a lot just observing, talking with customers, talking with the sales guys. The sales guys in the store, for example, are full of knowledge because they get questions all day long. And that's how you can come up with new product ideas, by asking them what people are asking for.
Sure. And the shift in the market segment there, recognizing that there was a need for a product that was easier for women to use just in their bathroom. Where did that shift in gender come from? Was it through those observations or some other research?
There wasn't any primary research that we conducted or even secondary that we bought. I think it might have been as easy, simple as read magazines to say the trend in women buying. Mm-hmm. So I think it was just from that, and then it was a theory that was proposed, and perhaps women are buying these caulking to do bathrooms, and then I think through asking questions with their distributors, they confirmed that. So that's where I think it came from. But the idea, I'm not sure if it was sparked from a magazine or somebody in our office might have even said, I'm the one that does all the buying. And we're like, really? I thought your husband would. No. And then we find out by asking others in the office that indeed they are the ones. So we're like, wow, we originally missed this. Let's look deeper. So I think that's probably how that one came about.
Yeah, exactly. This practice of actually getting out and talking with real people and observing customers and learning preferences and what they need, as opposed to maybe just collecting information through surveys or even existing data that was probably taken for some other reason. That's what product managers need to do, right? We actually get a handle on what customers value and what their problem actually is. Do you have another example of where those user observations, that ethnography kind of research, was used to look at a product and try to make that product better or come up with a new product?
Well, we're going through one now I can think about. In the commercial roofing area, there is it's very labor intensive. Unlike residential roofs, which they're similar, they're sloped and they're, you know, usually clear, and every once in a while there's pipes coming up. Commercial roofs are all different shapes and sizes. Some have more penetrations than others. Some are, you have, because they're relatively flat, they have to be tapered to drain so the water can drain off. There's a lot of different things to consider. The way that the old school way of putting on a commercial roof was the old tar and reinforcement. So they put down hot asphalt, and then you layer on a membrane, and then hot asphalt membrane, so forth. We've gotten a lot of the business has shifted away from that, to more simple putting down what we call single ply. However, that concept of being able to tailor a roof to that particular roof, tailor it and build it right there, like they used to do, has lessened in the market because of the cost of asphalt, the fumes, new cleaner technologies, and moved away from that. What I'm getting at is that worked very well, but as the materials and the public opinion changed, you started moving away from that. Now we're looking more towards liquid membranes. So in a sense, going back in that liquid, but with new liquids that are not hot asphalt. They're cold applied. They're reactive in other words, they mix with part A and a part B, and then they react and cure. So the idea now that going back to using a liquid and a felt allows you to custom that roof to that need more quickly now, because we've got faster cure type of materials, and they're what we call self-terminating, so that those liquid products will terminate right to all those flashings, right to the edge of the curbs to the walls, and now we're in a sense going back to the old way of doing things with new materials, and it's allowing a lot of versatility in the business by the new innovations in adhesives and sealants and materials that are in the liquid form. Years ago it was too expensive. So competition focusing on this area is coming out with more cost effective. So you're starting to see roofing move back to more of a kind of a liquid applied in the field. So that's an early development.
And that's really being driven by technology, the new materials, a change in environmental concerns, so materials that are more environmentally friendly and safe for the environment. And it sounds like also still faster application time and overall better quality.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because the focus is on the ability for that roofer to get that job done quicker, because time is money in this business. It's labor intensive, so to get them, that they can be done in 2 days instead of 3 days, that's huge. And this is very at the very front end of the market. But a lot of those people looking into the future and how this is evolving, I think you're going to see it more and more. It kind of reminds me back when I was in the telecom days, there was a lot of talk for years when I was back in the early 90s about how data is going to be so big. And we said that for 10 years through the 90s, like it's going to be big, and it never really did much. It was all just, why do I want data? I use my phone to call people. Now we're here doing, Skype. Who doesn't text, and get their email from their phones and all that. So now what looked like a promise that was everyone said was coming, and it didn't happen near as quick as people thought, but now it's the way you do things. So I kind of look at this liquid applied roofing as similar. where people are saying it's coming, but they're not seeing the traction. Mm-hmm. And it usually takes longer than people would think. But once it does and it catches on, you know, you get that growth. And I think that's what we'll see there as well.
Yeah, and interesting how you're seeing some connections between the industries you've been involved in, even though they're very different industries.
Yeah.
So very good. Thanks for sharing that example too. Kind of emphasizes the environmental forces and the technology forces driving new product development. Mm-hmm. I always like to wrap up my interviews by asking for an innovation quote that you love and why you chose that one. So what is yours?
Well, I would say perfect is the enemy of good. And that was, I believe, by Voltaire who said that. And the reason I like that is a lot of times in product development, we'll be working with other groups who are involved in that product at that particular time, but that's not their main role in the company. For instance, it might be people in the marketing area that are doing labels, let's say. Or it might be somebody in manufacturing who's producing the product. And one thing I've learned is you're never going to get the product perfect. You're never going to get it absolutely right. But you need to get to the market because that's where you end up learning in the market. Mm-hmm. And the as you learn in the market, is where you're really going to get your incremental growth and really learn to tweak that product to really make it successful. So it's very important to get in speed is to get the product out. Doesn't mean be reckless, but if you can get 90% there and the other 10% you'll figure out when you're in the market, that's good. If you wait till it's 100% perfect, it's going to be a delayed product. It's going to take longer to get out and your learnings are going to take longer. And you may miss some of the early market growth. And that's why that perfection is the enemy of good. You need to get out to the market and learn once you're there.
Perfect as the enemy of good. Excellent quote. Love that. And I would even go further that if you're trying to wait to make it perfect, you're never going to learn what you really need to know because you don't have that customer interaction.
That's right.
In the software world, there's a often used phrase that if you aren't embarrassed by the first version you ship, then you ship too late, right? Because you got to get it out and learn from the customer feedback and then make things better.
Yep. I like that.
Very good. Really appreciate your time going through this interview with us and such great experience talking about how to get into product management from another role and cross industries. What makes this interview work well for you? Was there anything you want to wrap up with?
Well, I'm just glad to share my learnings with others. I continually learn every day in this business and I think you need to look outside to learn from others. So if I could just give back some and some folks picked up some pointers, if it's just one pointer, that's great. So I'm just happy to share and help out any way that I can.
You're doing a great job of paying it forward. And thanks so much for sharing your experience and knowledge with us.
Sure.
Great. Thanks, Lee. Take care.
Okay, Chad. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training Your Customers Will Love You For. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.